This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. Well, chronic long-term illness is quite challenging for all patients, but it also takes an immeasurable toll on the families of these patients. Here with me to share his own personal journey and that of his son and family is Rabbi Charles Sherman. He is the rabbi of Temple Adath Yeshurun, which is the largest synagogue in central New York. Rabbi Sherman has chronicled all of this in his new book, The Broken and the Whole, Discovering Joy After Heartbreak, Lessons from a Life of Faith. It's published by Scribner, Simon & Schuster. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you.
So this book is a memoir. It's about your own search for joy and understanding after your young son suffered a brainstem stroke and it left him quadriplegic. Tell us about that.
Not only quadriplegic, in 1986, Eyal was 4 years of age at that particular time. And like most kids, he had maybe some respiratory illnesses and things like that. And all of a sudden, one night, in the middle of the night, it just all blew out. The specifics are not really necessary. But we found ourselves within 24 hours going to, that was the Upstate. First, what we did is that we went to our pediatrician. Next, we went to a pediatric surgeon. Next, after that, we found ourselves in the ER at Upstate. Next, after that, on our general floor of the pediatric floor, and then in the ICU. And then we were told that he had a brainstem tumor inside the brainstem that was inoperable. He was going to die in a matter of weeks, if not days. And someone knows our personality. We don't accept the word impossible. And we then began a journey over 30 years. He had subsequent surgeries outside of Syracuse. And what happened was he had a brainstem stroke.
So following the brainstem surgery, he had a catastrophic stroke.
Right, a couple of days later. And what happened was he was in a vegetative coma for months and months and months. And remarkably, he came out really of it, but his body was totally broken. Not just the quadriplegic, but he's vent dependent for the last 30 years. A feeding tube, nothing works. He requires 24-hour high-tech care, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. But the amazing thing is that his mind was intact. Intellectually, he was intact. And the beauty of the story is that after a couple of years, we brought him back to Syracuse, in a local hospital. And a couple of years later, because of government entitlement programs and resources, someone said, would you like to bring him home? We said, of course we would. We brought him home, and he was in a small room in our house. And then somebody said, you know, Syracuse has an inclusive education program. Let's try and bring him to school. We took him to school. He was 3 years behind everybody, but he skipped year after year after year. And someone said, what about going to junior high school? Went to Levy Junior High School. What about high school? Went to Nottingham High School, graduating grade level, graduate with high honors. And then all of our kids have gone to college, and the question is, what are you going to do? And he then went to college. Took him 9 years to complete the program, got a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He paints really with his mouth, and his health really is still very, very vulnerable. But it's interesting. Many of those in the medical community said to us that he was going to die within days, within weeks. They themselves have passed on.
That's the inevitable,
and
isn't
what
it?
I've learned from this is that the punctuation of life is not an exclamation point. It really is a question mark. And the other thing that I've learned really with Eyal's story is that, and as a clergy person, that when you're hurting, people say to you what? They said, well, get over it, or put the pieces back together again. What I've learned in my thesis is this: more often than not, you can't put the pieces back together again. And the challenge is how do you learn to live with the broken pieces of your life? And you know, people look at our lives from the outside in, and they said, you know, what kind of life do you have? I'd rather have learned the lesson about the significance of life and goodness of life from a textbook, or learn it from a different kind of life experience or in a classroom. But our life is terrific, believe it or not, because we understand what's essential and what's not essential.
So just for the audience or the listener, Eyal graduated from college, and he was able to He continues to be able to communicate. What he
read his lips. And that was an interesting kind of question, because how do you communicate with someone? There's a chapter in the book dealing with communication. What I've learned, you know, I do words for a business, for a living. I'm a horrible, horrible listener. I believe a good speaker, but a horrible listener. But Eyal has forced me to listen to a voice that makes no sound. But I dare say when he speaks in this silent voice and there's no sound comes out, there's more sound in that room than any place I've ever been for in my entire life. So therefore, the challenge right now is, like most of us, you get up in the morning, what are you going to do the rest of the day? It's finding an activity for him, and it challenges really all of us. And I think it's made the entire family a better person, but every day it's another challenge. It's a health issue, an emotional issue. It doesn't disappear.
What are the kinds of things that you feel were most challenging? In other words, I read somewhere that you said issues, to what length should a parent go to protect a child, for example?
You know, the thing is, the culture really of America now is that we deal with quality of life. And how do you define that kind of quality of life? And what we discovered is that it's not the big things in life; it's the little things. Again, and I got caught up into that kind of culture. There were moments when it was so desperate that I would turn to one of his doctors. This was in New York City. Who's a wonderful, wonderful man, and would say to him, is it time? I don't have to say any more of me. Is it time to stop with all the invasive things? And he got angry at me, and he said, there is life here. There is hope there. There is joy there. And, I think what a parent has to do is, just like in any patient environment, you have to advocate aggressively for that person. What I did learn, I learned about personhood. You know, it used to be when I would go visit people in the hospital, when many of us visit people in the hospital, I do it as a clergy person. If a person was very, very sick, I would not talk to the person. I disregard them. I would talk to the family, talk to the nurse really in the room. You know, I've changed. First thing I do when I walk in the room, I don't talk to the family. I don't talk to the nurse. I go over to that person, I introduce myself, I sing with them, I tell a story, because you never know what registers. That person still lying in that bed, there's a person there. There's a touch of dignity. And I think that's one of the lessons I've learned from this as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Rabbi Charles Sherman, and we're talking about how a family copes with a long-term chronic illness and disability, and his new book, The Broken and the Whole, where he reflects on his journey to find joy after heartbreak. So have you found joy after heartbreak, and how?
Yeah, it's what I've learned is that joy is much more nuanced than I thought it was. You know, there is a book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes, which seems to make a separation. It says there's a time for laughing and a time for crying. But that's not really, I disagree with that book's message, because it's intermingled. And at the very same time, there can be joy and there could be heartbreak, and there has to be that kind of recognition. You see, joy is not part of your DNA. You've got to work at joy. Okay, you got to work at it. So, for example, what we did is that if you came into our house today, it's not a maudlin kind of environment. We don't wallow in self-pity. When Eyal finally came home after years in the hospital, here I'm a clergy person, what we used to do, we used to act out some of the Disney stories. We'd do Cinderella. Mm. I would put a tuxedo on. I'd be Prince Charming. one of my kids would be the fairy godmother, and none would be the princess. And we would dress Eyal up and his younger brother with little whiskers, and they would be the coachman to Cinderella. It was finding joy in places that you never knew was there.
Wow.
And that really is the challenge. Joy is not an entitlement. You have to work at it, and you have to keep reminding yourself. One of the other things that I learned from this is that also, how do you get through it? You have to be incredibly focused. What I mean by that is that I don't look to the left, and I don't look to the right. I don't look what we once had. I live in today's time.
In the moment.
You bet I do. We live in the moment. As a clergy person, if I had a dollar for everybody who used to say to me, I could have, I should have, I would have, and how they squander their time. And when you say about joy, therefore, by living in the moment, you celebrate what you do have. Things that used to bother me years ago, they're totally irrelevant.
It changes your perspective on everything.
Yeah, I mean, for the better. For the better.
How did it challenge your belief in God, though? Or did it?
It's an interesting kind of question because when people, you know, that probably, being a clergy person, what people think is that it did challenge it. It did not. See, I never lost my faith. And the question is, why not? And my answer is, I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. But I never lost my faith, not once. It was always there. Did I get angry at God? Of course, just like you get angry at your parents, you get out of people who you love. That's only temporary. And you know, Harold Kushner, who wrote the book When Bad Things Happen to Good People.
Yeah, he's a colleague of yours.
Yeah, a good friend who once said to me that...
Tell us, he wrote the book When Bad Things Happen to Good People. That was about his own son that he lost very early from a very serious disease.
Yeah, he lost his son really to progeria, this aging disease. And the interesting thing really with him is when Harold, who wrote an endorsement for the book, once said to me, he says, I wrote the book that he wanted to write.
That you wrote the book he wanted to write.
Exactly. And one of the reasons being is it was too hard for him to tell that story.
But why the book now? In other words, this happened 30 years ago. Have you been writing it all this time? And did the process of writing help you in a sense? I don't mean that you've been physically writing it all this time. In your mind, have you been constructing?
What it is, I started writing this book when Eyal took sick. And what I did is I started taking notes on napkins and through by five cards, what the doctor was saying, then observing things. And then I thought I had a book here. And I had an agent 20-some years ago. And they thought it was a terrific book. And it turned out no one wanted it, and it was horrible. It was a horrible book. Then I went back to about 15 years ago, and I wrote it again, and it was worse than the first time.
And I think that's not encouraging.
No, I think what you needed really is a separation of time. I think I grew up. I see things differently. There's different kind of maturity, different kind of life experience, which allow me to reflect. You know, it's a memoir, but it's not a memoir.
What's the basic thing you would like people to come away with from the book? If you could just summarize it, what do you hope to give people from the book?
Strategies in order to really to get through heartbreak, and that it's all right to have the broken pieces. You know who really got it right? It's not a Jewish source. If you know that English nursery rhyme that goes, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, and all the king's soldiers, all the king's men couldn't put Humpty back together again, that really is the story of life. It's not a nursery school rhyme, because what it is that you live with the brokenness. Humpty Dumpty couldn't put the pieces back together again, and either can we. It could be illness, it could be death, it could be a divorce, it could be a separation, problems with your kids, problems really with your job. And the challenge is to be able to learn to live with that brokenness and not doubt who you are and what your capabilities are.
Or the ability to have joy at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. And there will be joy. What you've got to be careful about is not wallow and say, to feel guilty, to be able to laugh. I mean, there were moments when we were in the hospital. I remember that I met people when I was at Upstate here. There was someone who was a pig farmer. We from Boonsville. We were so far from each other's life experiences. And I remember sitting in the waiting room while I was in the ICU and they were intubating him. And he's telling me a story and it brought a smile to my face. I never thought I was going to be able to laugh again or smile again, but you're able to. And you can do it at the exact same time, even though your heart is breaking.
I think those are amazing messages to get across, and I applaud you for putting them all together in this wonderful new book. My guest has been Rabbi Charles Sherman. He's a rabbi of Temple Adith Yeshurun in Syracuse, whose new memoir is called The Broken and the Whole, and it chronicles his family's journey to find joy after heartbreak. By the way, the book is being released a little later this month, and it's available through all of the booksellers and purveyors, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and I want to thank you so much for coming in. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.